Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be talking with David Karagantla, who is the co-founder and CEO of Aleo Medical, a company that's reinventing the management of chronic disease. Dave has a great personal story. He was had a career in the Air Force and went on to medical school. And he's got some great leadership lessons that he's learned. I think it'll be helpful to you. Looking forward to today's conversation with Dave.
It's great to have Dave join us for our conversation this week. And appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd love to hear your story, your career story, and kind of take us back and tell us a little bit about how that you kind of went on your journey as far as to where you are today.
Absolutely. So it's been certainly an incredible ride. I think something that didn't know that entrepreneurship was, for me, if you will, but certainly was very intrigued, I will say, with what was beyond the art of just practicing medicine. So ended up going to medical school, was headed off to a surgical residency, had a chance to see the patient problem firsthand, decided to team up with my co-founder, who, interestingly enough, we met on a Little League baseball team almost 30 some odd years ago. And so he has a great background in both computer engineering and a PhD in biomed engineering. And I had a chance to see from afar his first startup that was in the wound care space. And it became, it was acquired and had a chance to then thought, okay, I've seen this problem. Maybe there's an opportunity to dig into this problem, take a year, hand it over at some point, a year in and go back to practicing medicine, but certainly got really excited by the impact. And I think the scale that one can have, I think for me, it was a little bit of, okay, I can do a certain number of procedures per year as a surgeon, but potentially the impact that could be had by bringing something innovative to market could be much greater. And what would that mean if we did so? And that was exciting to be able to pursue and got us to where we are today. So really, really been an interesting, eclectic journey that I think along the way.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to talk a little bit about your company and what you're doing in your space, but I always ask this question most every guest, if you're able to spin back time and talk to that 22-year-old Dave, what advice would you give him?
You hear a lot about following your passions, right? Mm-hmm. I think in many ways, learning that it's okay to explore, perhaps more than giving yourself permission to explore. And what I mean by that for me was in medical school, from my first rotation, which was supposed to be in, which was in family practice, but we had a little bit of a later start to the clinic I worked in, and very kindly the clinician let me go hang out in the OR starting at 6 a.m. and I would get a chance to go see these patients and sometimes see the full journey of seeing them in clinic, what went wrong, seeing the procedure done. And for me, it actually instilled a little bit of the cycle. It wasn't just I'm in clinic all day, right? It was definitely an opportunity. But what was intriguing even within the OR for me was all the tools, right? I'd be the kid before and after, if you will, a procedure, asking the scrub tech what this tool was, what that tool was. There'd often be a device rep in the room, and it would be, okay, why is it different? Why are you here? I didn't really understand how everything worked or how they got there. But by learning that, really understood that, wow, that was the part that was so exciting to me. Sure, the art is exciting and incredibly incredibly meaningful, but there's also an incredible art and in innovation to help those clinicians, interventional surgeons, whoever it might be, do procedures. And even outside of that, how can different techniques come into play? So don't be afraid and give yourself permission to explore is the thing that I'd say to my 22-year-old self. The thing in many ways is, it felt like it came at a cost at that time of, oh, maybe I should have studied more for X, Y, Z. And in many ways, it allowed me to learn a lot. And it was, quite frankly, preparing me for what I do today.
Right. So talk a little bit about your company and just the space that you're in and just some of the things that you've been able to help as far as the patient side of things.
So I think from an Alio perspective, we always look at integrating what we call the four Ps. So aligning the interests of the patient, physician, provider, and payer. I think if you don't do that, it's hard to get traction, adoption, and really solve a problem. You know, building technology for technology's sake is less than ideal. And from an Alio perspective, we saw a oft-neglected, underserved patient population in kidney disease. One that if you look at the historic way that we've tackled the problem, especially that last step or that end-stage kidney disease patient, only 1% of the Medicare population, but almost 10% of the cost. And we haven't really had a lot of room for innovation because it's all been driven by a bundle that's given for when you provide dialysis. Providing dialysis has been the economic driver rather than helping the patient be the best that they can be with given where they are today. And I think that's the approach that Alio took, which is what are the key metrics that really matter in keeping these patients out of the hospital or optimizing the drugs that they receive and helping them live their best lives. And so Alio is a end-to-end remote patient monitoring platform. We get your basic vitals like any good RPM company should do. But where we saw a specific value is in getting metrics like hemoglobin hematocrit, which can help you manage and titrate a patient's. They're often anemic, so managing the drugs for that is important and very expensive.
Sure.
And then also in terms of becoming the world's first company to be able to do potassium non-invasively was very exciting. Having that be too high or too low can lead to a heart rhythm abnormality, ICU stay, potential death. And so being able to avoid that is obviously, once again, very meaningful, certainly for the patient, but along the entire value chain. That's where we've started. We've got some exciting additions in terms of metrics that we're expecting to bring on over the course of the next 24 months or so in terms of hemodynamics, things like blood pressure, looking at flow within that access even more is certainly important. And expanding this beyond your ESKD patient to your CKD and then your heart failure patient over the next couple years as well is what is keeping us excited to keep pushing the ball forward.
Yeah. Well, your background and kind of go back to your kind of the military, your Air Force experience. Talk a little bit about some of the leadership lessons that you learned through that experience. It seems like a number of the CEOs I've talked to over the years, a lot of them have that that in their background and they brought some of those leadership skills and talk a little bit about that.
I think you certainly, that's one of the things that they're looking for, right? And I think it's something that is, where do you learn some of those key tools and techniques? And I probably don't do them as much justice as I should, but sometimes I often find myself relying on those or asking some of the different leaders that we've seen come through that sphere. What are the leadership lessons, right? It is something that they spent a lot of time working on. And I think that's actually probably the biggest lesson that I learned, which is growing your leadership team takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to give them feedback or to invest that amount of time in helping them become leaders. There's a lot of great technologists. There's a lot of great clinical or R&D or reimbursement. But then how do you create the next set of leaders that can go on to effectively be the CEOs of their own departments, if you will, is certainly important. I can probably do a lot better, but from that perspective, it's always a good reminder in the back of your head that it does take a lot of time to build good leaders. And that should not be ignored when you think about your calendar.
So you've kind of grown from that founder to the CEO of a company. You've had to raise funds. You've had to wear a lot of hats. But is there something that kind of surprised you that moving into that CEO spot that you wish you would have known earlier?
I think from the standpoint of being able to, the thing that I wish I would have known the fastest is probably the Pareto principle of, it's something I learned in college and sure. I think I've certainly applied to a lot in life, right? So effectively, whether it's you know, 80% of your output is going to come from 20% of your people. 80% of your complaints are also going to come from 20% of your customers, right? You can kind of take that down to a lot of different lenses. And I think that's true even in fundraising. 80% of your funds might come from 20% of your contacts and where to drive that. But I think that's really true for your time. And realizing that be where you leverage your time and is really important. I think there was a kind of seminal blog post written by Paul Graham a long time ago. I think it's called Schlep Blindness, and talking about all the things that you have to do as a founder, and talking about where do you, instead of looking at all the tasks, where can you really lever your time and hiring for the others and focusing on where you have a unique leverage and unique advantage. And that might be product, that might be sales, that might be fundraising, whatever it is for your company. Realizing that that's going to be, if you spend a lot of time there and drive an outsized effort, you can likely find a partner or, you know, someone on your team to take on those other tasks. So I wish I would have maybe hired for some of that instead of just hiring for the rest of the team, maybe hiring for, hey, I'm not that good at this. You certainly are going to have weaknesses, but hire a little bit for your weaknesses a little faster and then focus on where I can have an outsized impact is something that I wish, even though I kind of knew that principle, I wish I would have embraced it faster. And I think there are certainly lots of folks that are smarter than me. So why not find them to go do the thing that they're really smart at and can have an outsized impact on? It's certainly very important to allow them the freedom to do so.
So you've gone through the process of founding a company and kind of building that first executive team and helping kind of navigate that. What are some, as you look around, and I'm sure you have other founders that are kind of picking your brain and saying, you know, what should I be doing in that first year and trying to get things to align and making sure we don't run out of money before, you know, we make some progress. But are there particular blind spots you see that's pretty common with new leaders that you've worked with?
If I had to summarize it, I'd say be ruthless and killing risk. So I think a lot of folks will, in many ways, at least see a lot of folks work from the left, if you will, of we've got to build this, then do a clinical study, then do this, then get regulatory, then we're going to commercialize. And it's very easy to build out, you know, you can build a 5-year plan all day long, right? Sure. Yeah. But I think if you look at it from the other direction of, I'm going to have this amount of funds and make it, you know, 75% of what you actually have in the bank or 50%, you know, constrain yourself in some way, constrain yourself with time or with funds and say, okay, if I only had that, what are the things that I would absolutely ruthlessly kill to showcase that I'm worthy of getting another $1 million in my bank account to go kill the next things? And I think being able to show your investors that, showing your team that, showing your partners that is certainly important. And I think it's something that folks can get enamored with building the plan, and I'm going to do this, and we're going to do this over 5 years, and it's going to cost us, you know, Y amount of money, and I'm the right person to do it. They often are the right person to do it, but I think they need to actually take a little bit of the lens of, if I didn't have all those resources, right, how do I ruthlessly prove to people that I am deserving of your time, your money, your effort, whatever it might be, from those partners that you need to get to the next stage.
So as far as keeping the team kind of aligned and aligned to the mission of what you're about, you know, there's so many different directions, and it sounds like you've been given a lot of opportunity to treat different conditions and as a company, but how do you stay kind of focused as far as on doing the right things? What are some things that you've done as a team?
Certainly getting folks together and making sure is really important. I think now in the era of remote work, it's easy to get siloed. I think being able to break bread, force people into a group, I think that coincides with the ruthlessly managing risk question as well. Do they all agree on what are the biggest risks? And if you can, in many ways, agree on that, then a lot of it falls together. Here at Alio, what we've done to try and help people understand where, let's say, 70% of their time goes, then 20% time, and then 10% time, is we kind of put it into three horizons for the team. So horizon one is where you're spending 70% of the time. This is the, if it doesn't work, forget all the cool stuff you can do in the future. This has to work today. And this is where you should be spending the bulk of your time. And then being able to then describe what is in that horizon too. Here's what's coming up next. Maybe it's the next clearance, the next commercial milestone, whatever it might be. And then horizon three being a little bit more of, don't forget why you're here. This is why you are working for an incredible company that is tackling things that nobody else would even think about tackling. Here's why you can be a part of that. I think is important to give people a little bit of that that excitement, especially within a startup. I always remember the and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's the Antoine Saint-Exupéry quote, which is about, don't teach people to row, you teach them to yearn for the endless sea. And that's what you're on, right? You're on a mission to get to the other side of an ocean. And it's not always clear how big that ocean is, if you're headed in the right direction, what you might be fighting against. But if you can get your team to not only embrace what they're doing today, but yearn for what they can, potentially the impact they can have tomorrow, I think that's a way to inspire a team to tackle any challenge that comes its way.
So I know, every leader that I've talked to continues to learn, whether that's through, just keeping up with the trends in their industry or, reading leadership books. Is there anything particular that you've read that you recommend to other leaders that you think would be helpful?
One of the books that I actually take a chance at the beginning of every year to read, and then I hand out to our team as they come online, is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. It's Ben Horowitz's book about his time as a CEO. And it's certainly, interesting, right? He talked about one of the things that always stands out for me, talked about his time as CEO. He's like, when everybody asks, how I slept as a CEO, I slept like a baby. I woke up every 2 hours and cried. And, there's certainly those moments in your life that are going to happen. But I think that really being mindful that it's to embrace the joy of it's going to be tough, right? Embrace the roller coaster and it's going to be okay. You're going to have a moment where everything's on top of the world, and the life of startups is 30 seconds later, something's going to completely go the other direction. But look at it as a privilege rather than a burden, and that you can lose sight of that very quickly. And so the other book that I often give to the team is a story about Shackleton crossing the Antarctic, right? And I think that's one that also helps them understand that you're going to make unpopular decisions as a leader, and that's okay. And helping your team understand that you're going to make unpopular decisions is I think something that leaders can get stuck with. And it's not about being uncharitable to your team or wanting to be tough on them, but that's why you are a leader. You might have to make a tough decision, but you're also then going to have to get everybody on board with that decision and help them know that there are going to be challenging days ahead. And once again, why are they worth playing? So those are a couple of the books. And I think it's also important to look at books that are not always core, if that makes any sense. You learn a lot through them. Two that I think that are interesting are a book called Tubes. And it's basically the New York Times reporter, basically internet goes out and can't figure out why, finds out outside of his New York apartment, a squirrel has chewed through the cable line. And so then starts this question of, okay, well, where does this cable come from and where does it go? And basically tracks around all these deep sea cables, where they enter in New York, where it is, ends up on the other side of the Atlantic. Effectively, what is the underlying web for the internet? And from a physical transistors and switches and deep sea cables and ones that are faster than the others, and how has that had an impact about economies and growth of the world? And if you then take that to your own team, you think about how do you feed your team, right? How do you create that web and the interconnectedness, and what does that mean of that flow of information? Is it getting from the right spots within my team? So I think it's important to also see things a little bit differently. And the second book that I think is interesting for that is a book called Box, and it's the story of the very humble cargo container. So the ones that we now see, on stacked on all these cargo ships, or you might see on the back of on a trailer getting pulled down the highway. Sure. How do they get to be that size? Why are they that size? Why do they look that way? One of the key feature sets of that was, intrinsic to a lot of us in the Bay Area. Interesting enough, there was a shipping line that was very involved in bringing in Dole pineapples from Hawaii to San Francisco or Oakland, and then shipping them across the entire country. and how that actually, they had to create a certain container and size and basically codify that was such an important part of that process. Once again, if you take that to your team, if you think about that from that level of how do you create something that, that is very similar, so your team has a, an ability from one team to the next to carry information or compartmentalize it in a way that's easy for your entire team to understand, and they don't have to change, they don't have to stop one train, take all the cargo out, put another train, you're just creating an inefficiency. So I think it's important to also read stuff that stretches your mind and that you can then sit back and apply it to how your team works, as opposed to, you can read a lot of course, you can all, we can all read John Maxwell books and everything else. And they're all good. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not being derogatory when I say that. I'm saying, and they're great, but stretching your mind's important to figure out what's authentically you, I believe, as a leader.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. And some books that, that I haven't heard. So I'm going to add those to my list. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
So we've been blessed with a little girl that just turned 3. So, you know, certainly keeps you humble, certainly puts a lot of priorities into focus. And so it's wonderful to get this chance to experience life through her eyes. It's certainly important. Otherwise, my team knows, and I might be alienating some of your listeners here, but my favorite football team is Liverpool. So from football in the global sense, if you will. So that's usually the 90 minutes of my week that is Dave sacrosanct. Even if it's midweek, I'll try to sneak away to watch a game. The team kind of knows it's a good brain reset time for me, and we keep it a little sacrosanct on the calendar if we can, or Saturday mornings, or whatever it turns out to be. So those are two things that certainly do allow me to kind of get a chance to get away and recharge, which is important.
Yeah, great. What parting advice would you give a new or up-and-coming leader?
You're going to manage people's expectations and their feelings a lot more than you realized. And that's going to become a big, big part. It's not, once again, the product, the sales strategy. There's going to be really smart people that can build that out. But helping, as you've mentioned, Mark, getting them aligned, keeping them aligned, and keeping them motivated are three things that you're going to spend a lot of time doing, especially as you build that business out. So get ahead of that. It's not always easy. I can certainly attest to that, that it's much harder than you might think. It's also important to then be ready to scale yourself up. You don't know what the future holds. You can hope for an early exit, but it may be a very, very different outcome. You may need to be able to be willing to carry that company all the way past that. And so be ready to scale yourself up before you, that next inflection curve, being ready for your next S curve is important for a leader. So managing people and then scaling yourself up are two things to get ahead of in terms of spending time for the next step of your career or journey with a company.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I know this can be helpful for those that that listen. And I wish you continued success in all that you're doing, and at your company. It'll be exciting to see kind of what the next thing you tackle and helping more patients. And definitely appreciate your insights.
Awesome. Thanks again so much, Mark. Really appreciate your time. And thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit of what we learned along the way.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.